Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Three British prime ministers, sterling collapse, market chaos and strike action that continues to threaten their government. Most Conservative Party members will be glad to see the back of 2022. But what will 2023 hold for Westminster and what will it mean for us? Well, I'm joined on the line by Professor John Tong, Professor of British and Irish Politics at the University of Liverpool. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. So much to discuss, that political turmoil of 2022, as I mentioned, all of those issues emerging. The new Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, he's relatively new, only in the job since last October. What do you think his priorities are as of right now?
Well, I don't think we'll see the political drama we saw in 2022. That would be greedy for those of us who are connoisseurs of political drama. We'll never see a year like 2022 again. But Rishi Sunak's in-tray is still bursting with all sorts of problems. Getting inflation down will be his number one priority because that's the only way, really, that he's going to get rid of the strikes that are affecting Britain at the moment. Those strikes are over, the cost of living. Various trade unions flexing their muscles, not being prepared to take a pay cut on behalf of their members. And so you've seen industrial action. There's been more working days lost in Britain over the last 3 months than you've seen for a couple of decades. So that's priority number one, getting inflation down. There are signs that it is beginning to come under control. But then you've got the crisis in the National Health Service, and you've got the problem that there's no fiscal room for manoeuvre for Rishi Sunak. Every month last year, the government was borrowing more and more money to finance things, and that really is his biggest single problem. It's not as if he can offer sweeteners to the electorate later in the year in the run-up to the next general election.
Yeah, just on the strikes, and they're right in the middle of these strikes. Some train services are off again today. They were off yesterday. More strikes coming down the tracks later this week. The problem is, though, for the government, that those strikers, those workers, they have public support. That's a really difficult political hot potato for the government, isn't it?
Yeah, and that makes it very different from the last time that we had this scale of strikes many, many years ago in the winter of discontent of 1978-79. Then the trade unions were looked upon as a problem, and of course that led to the advent of the Thatcher government only a few months later, because public opinion was not really on the trade union side, it was more on the government side in many ways. This time it's very different because every successive survey has shown there is considerable support for the strikers. Now, there are signs in some of the recent polls that support for the railway strikes is in decline, but support for the NHS workers, for example, who are demanding a 19% pay rise, appears very high. So whilst the government has talked tough and said, you know, we're not going to negotiate, they've pointed out there's an independent pay review body recommended the nurses only get 5%. But the problem is the government is losing the battle of public opinion on the strikes. The government hopes that basically the trade unions will return to work as members become disenchanted with losing so much pay by being out on strike. But that is a gamble. And again, you know, the fact that Rishi Sunak is trailing, his party is trailing by 20% in the polls means that he can ill afford to further alienate public opinion. Mm-hmm. But there's no way, there's simply no way the government is going to meet some of those demands, the 19% demand from nurses. But, you know, nurses attract a lot of public sympathy in terms of, you know, they're asking the question, why should they take a pay rise way below the level of inflation, which is currently running in double-digit percentage figures?
Yeah, which would constitute a pay rise, which would constitute a pay cut, given where inflation is at. You said that the government doesn't have any money to play with, and that's due in part to the costs of the COVID schemes, and, you know, governments around the world have similar problems. But much of it as well is due, isn't it, to the impact of Brexit? And do you think the British public has made that connection?
Yeah, increasingly so. If you look at the survey opinion, when people are asked, do you think that Brexit was a mistake? More and more people have said yes. We're up to a figure of more than 60% now on average, if you look across the surveys, say Brexit was a mistake. That's not to say, you know, it's important to add this as a rejoinder, that of those 60% plus people who say it was a mistake, that they're all demanding a campaign to rejoin the European Union, because they're not. There's plenty who simply accept it now as a fait accompli and the fact that we will be out of the European Union for at least a generation. But there is certainly some buyer's remorse amongst a section of the electorate. And I think that again, augurs badly for the Conservatives because, you know, they won the last election on the basis of, quote, getting Brexit done. If the public has turned against the idea and associates it with economic ill, then clearly You know, you've got a problem. Mm-hmm. And that's the big problem, I think, for Rishi Sunak, is what is going to be the big catch line for the Conservatives at the next election. The Conservatives had an election-winning slogan. They had an election-winning policy in 2019. The Conservatives, you know, the economic mood music is so bad. On the plus side for Sunak, you know, Keir Starmer has not yet sealed the deal with the British public, and it's worth remembering that Labour, although it's got a big percentage poll lead, 20% ahead in the polls, Labour needs a 12-point lead to be able to form an overall majority at the next election. So it's not game over yet, but clearly, you know, the fact is that the problems confronting the Conservative government are of a scale that we've probably not seen for a good many years.
And if Labour do win that election, those problems will remain. You know, if there's no money in the pot, there's no money in the pot.
Yeah, and there was briefly, for a couple of months last year, an alternative economic strategy that was floated by Liz Truss, which was the way to get out of this economic mess is to have a dash for growth, cut taxes, and that played very, very badly on the international markets and was abandoned almost as soon as it was started. So Rishi Sunak is confronting going into the next election at a relatively high level of tax, with industrial relations problems, talking tough about curbing the right to strike as his response. It's difficult to see how the government can generate more money. I've no doubt that come 2024, and the Conservatives conceivably can't go to the country before late 2024, given that polling deficit, I can see some slightly better, you know, economic mood music for them then, and they may try to have some limited tax cuts, but the room for manoeuvre is so limited. That's not necessarily all the Conservative government's fault, of course. You know, if you look at some of the crisis that has been caused, the fuel inflation is obviously caused by external events like the war in Ukraine. So I think that as well, there's also the issue that Conservative MPs don't have much faith at the moment in their party's prospects. If you look at the numbers who say they are quitting before the next election and not fighting the next election, that's another headache for Sunak. There's a lack of confidence within the Conservatives' own ranks. Yeah, it's almost a sort of fatalism over their prospects.
They seem to have given up many of them before the fight. Just coming back to Brexit, in particular, the protocol, because you may have seen Leo Varadkar saying in recent days, he concedes that mistakes were made on both sides in the Brexit negotiations. Now, what do you think that says about what's likely to happen with the Northern Ireland protocol, as we know it's caused so many headaches up to this point?
I think Leo Varadkar's comments reflect better mood music. There is talk of bonding between the two prime ministers, not just a consequence of their shared Indian heritage, but that those sort of things can help. It's also very clear that Rishi Sunak was never a fan of the UK protocol bill, disapplying the protocol. Brandon Lewis, a former Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, made it clear that of all the cabinet members, Rishi Sunak was the least enamoured with the idea of having a bill that simply tries to disapply the protocol, because Rishi Sunak was of the view that that's almost certainly in breach of international law. Rishi Sunak has made clear that he wants a negotiated settlement with the European Union and has suspended the implementation of that protocol bill. So that creates some space for a deal, and I would expect some sort of deal to emerge over the next few months. That will then lead to the possibility of another assembly election in Northern Ireland, which to some extent would take, you know, on the image of perhaps of a referendum on the deal that emerges with the EU. But there's clearly a softening of line on both sides, a softening on the UK government's line under Rishi Sunak, on the hardline sort of belligerence that we saw previously, and on the EU side, a recognition that the EU single market is not going to be hugely threatened by if you reduce checks to simply those going on goods between Great Britain and Northern Ireland are definitely going south of the border. So there, I think there is room for some optimism. A protocol deal is likely to emerge over the next few months. Right, well, whether that will satisfy the DUP to get them back into the institutions is a big question. But I think there's a pressure as well to celebrate properly the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. There's a recognition those institutions need to be restored, and restored fairly quickly now.
John, we'll talk soon, I'm sure. Professor John Tong, thank you for joining us once again on the programme. Next up, what makes for a great front man or woman in a band? Who better to tell us than Dave Fanning?
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.